So hello everybody. For those of you who are just with me, welcome back. It's been a long time. How many of you were just here in the session just now, like 2 minutes ago? Apparently I wasn't completely terrible then. Thank you very much for enduring yet another session. My name is Glenn Condren. I'm a program manager and I work on the .NET Server team, otherwise known as recently was made the .NET Server team. Specifically, I worked on ASP.NET. So I worked on the DNX and a lot of the core runtime of ASP.NET and the lower parts of ASP.NET. So typically, the higher you get into MVC, the less I can help you. And the lower you are, the more I can help you, for the most part. And so invert the question I just asked. How many of you were not here for the .NET Core talk that I just did? Okay, excellent. If nobody put their hand up, I would have explicitly not said anything again. Because a couple of people weren't here, I'll need to occasionally make a couple of references back just to make sure they don't get completely lost. But I assume that the majority of you would be the same for both of these talks, so thank you for validating that assumption. So what is ASP.NET Core? I already know the demographics. You're all the same people as last time. So ASP.NET Core is a new open source cross-platform framework for building modern cloud-based web applications using .NET. Does anybody know what that means? That's good. That means it's successful as a statement, because no one's supposed to know what any of these things mean, right? So let's unpack it a little bit and talk about the bits that are bold, because they're important. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made them bold. Open source. So who already knows that everything is open source and the world is great? Nobody. Okay. The ASP.NET, every single line of code for ASP.NET Core is on GitHub. There is no other repository. There is no other issue manager. There is nowhere else that we write code except for the repositories that you can see and contribute with too. It is all under the MIT license. It is all in the open. And if you feel like it, you can go and make contributions. As we saw in the last talk, the number one contributor to our HTTP server does not work at Microsoft. Okay, so everything is open source. And that's what that means. And in this case, if you're running on Core CLR, that actually means that everything from the lowest possible piece of native code all the way through to your browser is open source. Like everything all the way down, except for like your code maybe. Maybe your code's open source too. Okay, and it's cross-platform, which means that it can work on Linux, it can work on Mac, it can work on Windows, it can work on several flavors of Linux, in fact. We had a deal with Red Hat, so we could work, we're currently targeting like Ubuntu and Debian and Red Hat, maybe like CentOS, something like that. So a few distros from the beginning, and then we're hoping that, you know, someone else will do our work for us and port it to a bunch of other platforms. Or eventually we'll get to it as well, depends on what people want. If everybody tells us that FreeBSD is the best thing in the world, then we'll look at trying to port it to FreeBSD, but so far, nobody that uses FreeBSD is coming out and talking to us. Probably because there aren't that many of them that care about what we're doing. Okay, and it's there for building modern cloud-based applications. Does anybody know what a modern cloud-based application is? That's good, neither do I. I assume it's something sort of application that was built recently that works on the cloud. It's the only definition, the only thing that those words could mean, right? What the intent of that wording was is to build the types of applications that you want to build today that don't fight you. So if you want to build an Angular application with Web API as a backend and deploy it to Azure Web Apps, to Azure Websites, or whatever the name of that thing is now, Antares, you can. And if you want to build a traditional MVC application, you can do that too. Like any of those sorts of things, anything that you want. So we're trying just to not be different than the way modern developers, you people sitting here, would like to work. And it's using .NET. So let's talk about the road for .NET. We talked earlier about innovation, about open source, about cross-platform. Hopefully I landed the messages that everything is open and you can see all of the source code if you so wish. We're still doing lots of cool stuff all across the stack, You still see innovations in all of .NET, not just in .NET Core or just in .NET 4.6. And we're going to try and make .NET, the .NET that you know, work in as many places as we can. We bought this company called Xamarin. Have any of you heard of them? They have like a monkey as an icon. Miguel de Casa really likes them. Yeah. So we're doing a lot, as well as not just in our own work to build Core CLR and make it cross-platform, but also in, you know, acquiring people and making sure that we can get .NET everywhere, and that you can use .NET everywhere, and you can use the skills that you have as a .NET developer wherever you want to use them. Right? You should be able to write C# wherever your heart desires. So let's talk about what .NET is. This is the same slide that you saw in the last talk. For those of you who weren't with me before, you missed out on a fantastic session, you'll be very disappointed. There's a common underpinning of all of .NET, the compiler and the JIT and NuGet packages and a bunch of stuff that's common. There is a .NET 4.6 and there's .NET Core. Some project types only work on .NET 4.6, some work on both. ASP.NET Core works on both, and some only work on Core. So when you're choosing .NET Core or .NET 4.6, the question comes down to whether you want the benefits of .NET Core, like side-by-side cross-platform, or if you're okay with .NET 4.6. If you're going to use like Windows Forms or like Web Forms or something like that, then you're going to have to stay on .NET 4.6. If you're okay with not and you're using something else that works on both, you've got a choice. Okay? Specifically today, I'm talking about this like blue box here now. In the last talk, I talked more generally about .NET. Now we're focusing on ASP.NET. So we're going to zoom in a little bit. See that fantastic slide transition there? It was pretty good, right? Okay. So this is the ASP.NET stack. And the .NET 4.0, so all this is really saying is if you stay on .NET 4.6, you can use web forms, you can use MVC 5.x, you can use Web API 2.2, or you can use MVC Core, ASP.NET Core. I just realized that this graphic is out of date, that MVC name is wrong, so forgive me, and the ASP.NET 5 name as well. Forgive me for that. This should say ASP.NET Core and like ASP.NET Core MVC, as it should be where it says ASP.NET 5 and MVC Web API 6. Those two names have changed. Okay? So if you're gonna, if this far left piece, the three green boxes and the pink here, that's all only on .NET 4.6. Web Forms isn't on .NET Core. Okay. If you're gonna use ASP.NET Core, you can be on either .NET Core or Desktop, and you've got some choices with Core CLR. There's some .NET Native stuff coming. It's not necessarily gonna work, but right now for anything, but eventually maybe you'll be able to compile your Web API, pass --- native. And get an actual native assembly, native thing out the other end, like a. And when I say native, I don't just mean like the native XE we saw last time, where you could click it and it would run your managed code. I mean everything is compiled. So take in. Imagine if you took your IL and you generated C++ code out of it, and you ran that through the C++ compiler. That's kind of what you get when you do .NET native, right? It's actually native out the other end. So that might be something that you'll be able to use in the future. There's a lot of restrictions with that. Like if you, .NET Native fundamentally requires you to be able to, well, the thing about .NET Native is once you've completely compiled the world, you can theoretically do a lot of tree shaking, which is like just delete anything that's not actually required by my application. I don't care if I told you I needed this thing. If I'm not using it, don't bring it in. That puts some restrictions on things though, right? Like reflection becomes hard, for example, because you're changing things. Okay, so let's talk about the roadmap for ASP.NET. Some people, there was at least one person up here a minute ago asking me about this from the last talk. This URL is where this roadmap lives. We shipped an RC1 using the DNX in November. We had a date for when RC2 was going to ship, and then we redacted that date. And we had a ship for when 1.0 was going to, had a date for 1.0, and we said remove that as well. And the answer that I have to tell you is that I don't know when RC2 is going to ship, and I really don't know. Not that I know when I can't tell you, I just don't know. And I don't know because nobody knows, because I don't know how long it's going to take to make RC2 work properly at the quality that we would expect it to work to be able to be shipped. And part of the reason for that was I don't remember if I have a slide about this. I don't think I do. So we did ASP.NET 5. I know there was at least a few people that had tried this out. So we started to build this cross-platform stack as kind of the server team. We had .NET Core being built for us, the runtime and the libraries and stuff, but there was no real knowledge yet from a greater .NET F ecosystem standpoint of what it meant to be cross-platform in .NET. But in typical .NET Server fashion, we said, we can't wait for that. We need to ship something. We need to get something built. We need to get people excited. We need to make .NET great again. Right? And we did. We made DNX and we made ASP.NET 5 and we were able to show that it was possible to build .NET applications and run them all over the place. And the reaction we got from the world was great. Like the reaction we got when we were able to go on stage, deploy an ASP.NET application to a thumb drive on a Windows machine and plug it into that guy's Mac and then let him run it and it would just work. Like that's amazing. And after that we went, okay, this is great. We're obviously shipping lots of cool stuff, but we need to think about this from a much, much more than just server, right? DNX was fairly, whilst it was possible to build console applications and stuff with the DNX, it was designed really with server in mind. So it was kind of very server specific, and when I say server, I basically mean building web applications specific, right? It was very much tailored towards that type of environment. So once we stepped back a little bit and said, okay, let's think about how this works more across the board, more unified, like holistically, then we had the concept of the .NET CLI. I showed some demos of it in the previous talk. Once the .NET CLI existed, we have to switch everything in ASP.NET 5 over to use the .NET CLI and use this new core, kind of .NET core model, this unified model. So previously in an ASP.NET 5 application, there was no program main with an entry point that you had to execute. Because your ASP.NET 5 applications in RC1, they're not console apps. Like I showed everybody in the previous talk, an ASP.NET 5 application, it had a program CS, and I said, ASP.NET core applications are just a console app, and they call some libraries, right? That was elegant, it was nice, it was easy for you to understand. For RC1, that's not true in RC1, the one that's actually released today. They have DNX, they don't have a program main. They're very special. Okay, so part of this work to make everything kind of make more sense across the board is to change ASP.NET and change DNX and get rid of the DNX, like remove the DNX. We didn't actually get rid of the DNX. Realistically, what happened is we copied and pasted a whole bunch of code from the DNX into the .NET CLI. For a long time, when you downloaded the .NET CLI, it actually had a DNX inside of it. When you said .NET restore, it would shell to the DNX. That's all changed now. But that's how we started to move from this DNX ASP.NET 5 model into this more kind of generally applicable .NET Core, .NET CLI model, where an ASP.NET application is a console app with a bunch of libraries. Okay? Does that help some of you who have used both and started to see some of this? There's a couple of nods, so hopefully that helps. For those of you who haven't looked at any of the RC1 stuff yet, most of what I said probably doesn't matter to you in the slightest. At some point in the near future when you do look at it, you'll look at the next release after RC1 and it'll just be .NET CLI and won't care about any of this. But for those of you who are trying it out now and trying the transition, that information I just said will probably save you at some point because you'll understand kind of what's happening. And in terms of dates, tying it back to what we're talking about here, turns out it was fairly difficult to make some of those changes and it's taken us a bit longer than we thought. And we don't really know when we're going to finish. And we decided to say we don't really know when we're going to be finished. And when we are, we'll tell you. Damien Edwards does every week an ASP.NET community stand-up. As soon as there's a date, I'm sure he will announce it in the community stand-up, and this roadmap URL will be updated. And he talks about it a lot, about where we're at and what we're happening. We're trying to be as transparent as we can. Interestingly, especially for you guys who have been .NET developers for a while, who's been .NET developer for like several years, like a few years, for a while? Yeah. Especially for you guys who have been .NET developers for a while, all the stuff that's happening now, this has always happened when we were building .NET. You just never saw it before. Because by the time it got into your hands, we'd already gone through all this internally, right? And then we got to something at the end, and then we said, okay, let's ship it. That's great for you guys if all you want to do is just get the next thing that we give you. Not so great if you want to be able to influence the direction that thing's going to go in. So things seem a little bit more chaotic because you're seeing the process of working out how to build the future .NET framework and the future ASP.NET. And because you can see it, you can also comment on it, and you can influence, and you can talk about it. And we think that the pain that you might feel from having like constant build-to-build breaks in betas and alphas and stuff, and like, and the kind of name change, constant renames and stuff that you kind of feel, we think that the value of you being able to participate in us building the .NET framework and the ASP.NET is greater than the pain, like the value is greater than the pain that you get that for those other things that I just mentioned. So that's why you see some of that stuff. So now that we've finished that some slight tangent, let's talk about what ASP.NET Core is. Now what I'm kind of logically grouping concepts here into an ASP.NET Core, which is this stuff, and like an MVC, and which is built on this. So the core of ASP.NET, we have hosting stuff, where this is about basically just booting your application. It's a whole bunch of middleware. Who knows what Owen is? A couple of people, okay? So there's a middleware pipeline, which is new ASP.NET. How many of you are already ASP.NET developers, like MVC5, like current MVC devs? How many of you don't really do ASP.NET at all in your jobs? Okay. A bunch of people, put up hand up if you don't have hands. Okay, so dependency injection is kind of baked into the core, into the middle of ASP.NET, and we'll see some of this in a minute when I get to demos. There's a new and different configuration system. Hierarchical configuration and web.configs are not a thing that ASP.NET Core cares about. There's a different logging mechanism, and there's some changes in the application frameworks. Like MVC has evolved a little bit in the new world. Not as much as the core, but a little bit. So let's talk about what ASP.NET looks like today. You have Razor, right? Razor is the same in web pages and MVC, right? But Web API doesn't have it because you've got different products. You've got a web pages product, you've got an MVC product, you've got a Web API product, right? They're all kind of slightly different. Web pages is, you know, and then you've got HTML helpers. Now you've got HTML helpers in web pages and you've got HTML helpers in MVC, but they're not the same HTML helpers. They're different. Because, I suppose. You have controllers in Web API and you have controllers in MVC, but yet again, they're different. They have a different base class, they're a different type. Using them is a little bit different. You have actions in both of these things, but once again, they're a little bit different. You have filters in them, you have model binding, and you have DI. All of these things are distinct from each other. And if you've tried to use Web API inside an MVC application, you end up configuring the same things over and over again, what feels like the same things. They're the same concepts, they're the same names, they're mostly the same surface area. There's a few tweaks here and there, but they're mostly the same, but they're different types, right? Does anybody think they know why that is? No? Nobody? So when we built Web API, so back in this stack diagram, okay, let's go back in time. This thing over here called System Web, how many of you have had to know anything about System.web, the assembly name? A couple of you, one or two of you, okay. So that is System.web is the assembly inside the full .NET 4.x where all of ASP.NET is implemented. When building Web API, we had a particular mandate which said Web API, because it's designed for hosting like JSON endpoints, needs to be able to be self-hosted. I want to be able to put it inside a console app, I just want to run the console app, and I want to be able to get some JSON from it, right? Many of you, maybe you've seen some demos like that. If we tied it to System.web, you would not be able to do that, because System.web cannot exist outside of the full, like all the machinery of the .NET framework, can't really exist in a self-hosted world, right? It's too much. So we ended up saying, okay, we're just going to make a new controller type that's slightly different but mostly the same, and we just did that for everything, so that you could gain some of the advantages we wanted for not being inside System.web. Okay, so basically. So yeah, so that whole divide there is just purely to avoid Web API having a dependency on the assembly where all these types here happen to be implemented inside .NET 4.6. That was all. Okay? So, when we're rebooting a little bit, we're rebuilding MVC, we're rebuilding the ASP.NET stack as part of ASP.NET Core, there is no system web assembly anymore. We don't have to avoid web API being tied to system web, so we can make them all the one web framework. So now, instead of having MVC as a product and web API as a product and web pages as a product, and they've all got stuff that kind of looks the same, but they're all a little bit different, now there's one ASP.NET web framework that can do everything that web pages, web API, and MVC could do, and is called MVC. Does that make sense? So now it's unified, a unified web framework in ASP.NET Core. Apparently there's no next or back either. I'm hoping eventually it comes to life. So my machine completely froze. Oh, so I've noticed this a couple of times with PowerPoint on the Mac. I don't know if it's because right now I'm running a Windows VM in order to show you the demos later, and it just killed it, or if it's something else. If worse comes to worse, I'll reboot. But I'm hoping that it will just come back to life for me in a minute, like it has historically. And if it does, it'll probably like catch up. Everything will jump around. I hope that'll happen anyway. So yeah, we decided to unify the web framework in order to make a unified ASP.NET Core stack. And, okay, looks like a reboot it is. Something completely killed everything. So, I can't remember what the next slide is. Otherwise I would have just talked about it, but I really can't. So, can you see, you can't see this. I'm waiting for the Mac to start. It's logging in. And I had to shut down because you froze, yes. Hello? I'm not sure how to deal with catastrophic machine failure as a demo problem. If there was a problem with ASP.NET, I could help it. Apparently, I've talked about Windows-specific stuff for too long and my Mac got angry at me. I have been told that me doing all of this on a Mac is the most amazing thing about my talks, so thank you for those guys that said that. Now I'm paying the cost, apparently. Hey, I can see something again. Well done. You're a credit to whoever made you. Okay, so let's go back. Let's find my slides. I know you can't see anything yet. Just bear with me for a second. Welcome back. Yeah, thanks. My machine said welcome back. See, at least it's nice about being a douche and destroying my ability to do demos. Actually, I don't want to do that. Let's go back to where we were. What was the next slide? Look at that. What was the next slide? Was to talk about MVC. Okay. Now, we want to talk about MVC. So, I just talked about ASP.NET Core, and then how there was a thing called ASP.NET Core, and it had middleware, and it had DI, and it had a bunch of low-level stuff. And then there's MVC, which is the unified web stack that we just talked about. We talked about why the world was fragmented before and why it was merged. I'm telling you this so that I remember, by the way. Now, MVC did a few other things that were cool. So we talked about the concepts of merging at the first one. We talked about all that. It's built on this. So MVC is a web framework that is built on top of the ASP.NET Core stuff that we showed in the slide earlier. And it supports .NET Core. Now, there's a lot of core in that sentence, and I apologize. But basically, there's a few core. There's a few intrinsics. There's a few things that are kind of central to ASP.NET, And that's middleware and hosting and config and DI. And an MVC is a web framework built on top. It's entirely possible you could build some other web framework that is not MVC and still use all those same middleware-like pieces, right? There's nothing MVC-specific about the static file middleware that we'll talk about earlier, okay? So that's why there's kind of a distinction here. Now, some people asked me this earlier. The ASP.NET will run on IIS or it'll be self-hosted. And in fact, when you're running on IIS, what actually happens is we use this particular piece of IIS middleware, the HTTP platform handler. So IIS actually spins you up as a self-hosted process and then sends all the traffic through itself. So when in ASP.NET Core, you're not actually integrated in the same process, the single process that IIS has anymore. You're actually a separate process that IIS manages. And that's actually interesting, and the reason it's interesting is because if you were to, say, be on Linux, you're probably running it like that as well. You've got like Nginx or something running, and then you've got another process that's got your web application in it, and then your Nginx is just the proxy through. IIS works in a similar manner when using ASP.NET Core. Okay? And then it has a bunch of cool new features, which we'll go over when it gets to demo time. Apparently it's demo time. So we'll do some demos. Okay. So I probably shouldn't have closed the deck. I probably should have left it open for like the slides afterwards. Now, you'll have to forgive me. Apparently because my machine decided to die, I have to start Windows again, because all these demos are going to be in Windows. They're also all going to be using RC1 update 1. So they're not going to use a .NET CLI. I showed you previously, earlier on today, that you can use a .NET CLI for an MVC application. And that can work. However, the tooling support hasn't caught up to the command line support. So if I want to show you what the experience of building an ASP.NET application is going to be like, I kind of need to show you the released bits so that you get all the tooling support. Otherwise, you would be seeing me like hack together a bunch of stuff, and it wouldn't really feel like the way we intended to feel like. Okay. So, the plus side, you'll be able to do everything that I do today. If you go to like getasp.net and you download the thing and you run Visual Studio 2015, you'll be able to do everything I show you today will work, and you'll be able to run an application. And I have to click no a whole bunch of times. I don't really know why. Thank you, OneDrive. You're amazing. Okay, so first thing what I'm doing here is just creating file new application. Plus, there we go. Selecting ASP.NET application. We're hoping in the future this will become a lot easier, that it'll be, we've had a few people complain that it's a little bit confusing to go pick this because they expected something called core in this dialogue here, right? They would like search for core and see nothing that they cared about. So the way you create ASP.NET Core or ASP.NET 5 application today is to pick web app and then it gives a new web window. We're hoping we'll make this a bit better. Interestingly enough, this came about as a way of trying to make the other thing better in the first place, and it turns out it didn't really help much. So we're going to try and make this a lot better in the next newer iterations of tooling, and you should see that happening. We're going to click empty. The basic difference between these three templates, so there is no difference in the web framework. It's just a difference between how many packages you get installed by default and how much code we generate. So like if you pick web API, you get the core MVC packages that don't have Razor in them, and you get some web API type code generated. You pick web application, you get like an MVC app with a whole bunch of stuff. So really all this thing here is, these three things are more like a slide bar than a thing now they are. Like it used to be they were all different. Now it's just more stuff in my new file, new project, or less stuff. No, picking any individual one doesn't tie you to any particular thing in any way, because there's only one web framework now. It's not like it was before, where if you picked web API, you didn't get any of the MVC stuff, so putting MVC in the web API project was a little bit awkward. Like, none of that is true anymore. Okay, so I boosted my fonts, so hopefully everybody can see. Can everybody see? People down the back? Yeah? I hope so. I can boost it more. If not, let me know. So let's take a little bit of a look through what an ASP.NET project looks like and what the experience for an ASP.NET project is. Now, I talked about Owen earlier and I talked about middleware. So we're going to start with this startup CS, because this is part of the intrinsics that I said earlier, is that fundamentally, ASP.NET is a thing which can accept HTTP requests and generate a HTTP response. It's right? Everybody can agree? That's what web things do, right? Okay. Now, in the middle, somewhere, you need a chance to write code to do something. And MVC is a particular way of doing that. So what this configure method here it does is it is the pipeline that a HTTP request goes through in order to become a HTTP response. Does that make sense? So Kestrel is a web server we've talked about, the thing that got up to like 1.5 million requests a second. It can accept, it will listen on a socket, and it will take a HTTP request, and it'll generate a HTTP context with all that request information, and then it'll flow through all the methods that you tie together here in this pipeline. Right, so each of the methods, when you go app.use, what you're saying is add a thing to the pipeline and pass all the stuff through it that comes in. Okay? Cool. So in this case, what I'm doing is I'm saying use IIS platform handler. This basically just helps make IIS work. If you're not going to use IIS, you can remove it. If you are using IIS, you need it there. But you can also, having it there doesn't mean you have to use IIS. It's benign. If you don't use IIS, it doesn't matter. Okay, now what this thing does, it is possibly one of the most useful web applications ever made. In that, what it does is it does response.write hello world every time anybody ever requests anything from it, which is great. Okay, so I run. Now this is running using IIS Express. You can see down here, and it's slow, but it works. Okay, so it runs, says hello world. Now there's a few interesting things I'm going to do here. First thing, it doesn't matter what I type after this. It still says hello world, right? Does that amaze anybody? Is that confusing? Nobody wants to admit that it's confusing. You're all experts at this. You know what's going on. Okay, so there's a HTTP request that comes in. It happens to have associated with it the path, right? It has that bit after the server to say, this is what's being requested, right? But this pipeline, this use IIS platform handler, and this run, they're the only things that get called every time every HTTP request comes in. None of them look at what the path is after the server name. They just return hello world. So it does not matter what your HTTP request looks like. It will always return hello world in this code, right? Because you are building the pipeline that handles HTTP requests. I'm going to show you what this looks like and how you make MVC work in this in a minute. But this is one of the really core tenets, right? And you can tie this together to make it however you want this thing to work. So let's look at some interesting things. That was probably fairly deep, probably too deep for this particular session. I'm sorry about that, but it's interesting. Okay, there's a www root folder here. In ASP.NET Core, we introduced this concept of a folder, of a public folder, basically. Has anybody used Node or some of those frameworks that have like a public folder and you put all the public stuff in there? That's what this is. Okay, so in ASP.NET Core, we by convention have this folder called www.root, and stuff inside of it is designed to be servable so that it can shrink. Which means that you could return it to users. So you put CSS in there, put any raw HTML, JavaScript, all the like public static content that you want to be served, put it in there. All your application code goes outside of here. You point IIS at the www root, which means even if IIS will serve everything that's in that folder, none of your application code is in there. It's just not possible. So unless there's a bug that allows IIS to travel up outside the root of the actual web application, which is a pretty severe bug, and IIS is probably pretty broken if that happens, you can't accidentally serve things you didn't intend because you only put stuff in this folder that you expect to be able to be served as is to customers. Right? The only thing that's not that case is this web config, and that needs to be there because it configures IIS. And so you still rely on IIS to protect that for you. But otherwise, we think you get a better, we think that separation of concerns is better for you for just in general being safer. So let's make this file called test.html. Okay, this is going to be a raw, Visual Studio is blazingly fast today. Look at that. Wow. Okay, so I'm going to put in a H1 and I'm going to say, bam. okay? And then I'm going to stop, just because. I don't think I had to stop. Now I'm going to run this. You don't want to look at that yet. And then, okay. It's all like a click anyway. That was the most useful thing in the world. Okay, so I'm going to run my app, hopefully. I think I hit the wrong key combination because I have to hold a few weird things on Mac in order to make Windows keystrokes work. Okay, so I have Hello World, right? Theoretically, now I can do this. But I can't. He's nodding. But do you know why? Or are you just going, okay? So I can't, and the reason I can't is because nothing in my pipeline knows how to serve static files. Right? We said earlier that the only thing your application can do is things that you put inside of your configure method. I didn't put anything in here that told it was allowed to serve static content. And even if I did, nothing in here knows how to handle the slash test.html, so it still just returns hello world. Okay, so what we can do though is we can say use static files. Now, I know there's no IntelliSense for this here. That's because I'm going to show you this other great feature. Okay, so bam. Add package. So what I just did is I knew there was a method on application called use static files. I typed it, and then I said control dot, and I said, you know what, there's a NuGet package that has that method in it. Do you want me to go get that for you? And I'm going to say, yeah, I want you to go get that for me. Could you do that real quick? And it will. Okay? And then it went and did a restore. In this case, it didn't actually have to download it because I already had it. So it just added a reference to that package, and now I have static files. And I can see that I have IntelliSense and stuff for it. Now, if I run my application, I can get Hello World once again, and then I should be able to go to test him. Well, bam! Yeah, that was a lot of work. So there was a core principle of ASP.NET Core. I'm in love. Apparently, we're in love with the word core. One of the I'm trying to think of variations of the word core that made the same thing, realistically. One of the things we wanted to achieve with ASP.NET Core is what we referred to as pay for play, only pay for what you use, right? If you don't need static files and you don't add that static files package, nothing inside your process knows how to handle static files. There is no code loaded using memory on your server that can handle static files. It doesn't exist. It's not there anywhere. Right? So it's not the case that because you're using, so one of the things that happens a lot in .NET 4.6 land, and it'll still happen with ASP.NET Core in 4.6 probably, is by using one little thing, you end up pulling in everything because all the dependencies end up getting pulled in. So by factoring and layering the world better in .NET Core and in ASP.NET Core, and not being coupled to .NET framework types, if you're using an ASP.NET Core application, you only get what you ask for, which means you can build a very lightweight, very trimmed, very lean process like Web API, for example. Are any of you using like Angular, Spar applications, or intend to, like that type of model? There's a few of you. So in that world, this may be, like at the end here, you need to use MVC to get Web API to be able to do some JSON recalls. And otherwise, this is all your application needs, right? And then now, and it's all you're going to pay for on your server, which means you can put more things on your server before you hit the maximum amount of web applications, right? So you get better density on the hardware that you're running on, which is nice. It means you can maybe you could run on lesser tiers in the cloud, possibly. This sort of stuff isn't normally a limiting factor in that. I mean, you'll be using less memory, but it's usually compute and stuff that you're trying to avoid. Okay, so that's cool. That shows you a few cool things. Inside my project JSON here, the project JSON file is the core of. It is the project file. So all of your experiences are driven around this project JSON. In fact, there's a couple of cool things that you can say. If I unload this project and I edit it, there's something missing from in here. And how many of you actually look at these files fairly regularly? Anybody? I am very sorry that we put you in a situation where you have to look at these files very regularly. What's missing from in here is a list of all the files in my project. There's no C# files listed in here, right? There's no merge conflict that says, this, you know, Fred added this C# file and you added this C# file, five GUIDs changed and now you have to merge. I don't really know what to do. I'll just click go and so hope that it works. Right? That doesn't exist. And what that means, is that if I go and open this in File Explorer, and I go here, and I create a new file, let's like create one of these, look! Or I go and like create a new JavaScript file, you can see it's actually there inside Visual Studio before I've managed to actually give it a name in here. Right? And now I have a JavaScript file in my project. So if you're trying to use Yeoman, you're generating a whole bunch of concept stuff outside of Visual Studio, there's no more dance where you go, yo, make me a bunch of cool stuff, and then go back into Visual Studio and say, show me your files, and then like right-click on it and add them all, and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't exist. Because it turns out, really, most of the time, you want everything that's inside your project folder to be inside Visual Studio. Because you want to be able to use Visual Studio to edit any of the files that you happen to want to put code in. Who would have thought? And there's some stuff inside your project JSON that lets you exclude things from here if you really care, if you have like stuff in there that you actually don't want. Right? Because it turns out that if you're excluding files, it's actually far less common. In the majority of cases, you want everything in here, and there's a couple of things you want to exclude. It's not the opposite, where you want to explicitly tell you everything that you want because there's heaps of stuff that you don't want in here, right? The amount of assets you have inside your source folder that don't actually want to appear in Visual Studio is usually pretty small. So this works good. Now, that's not actually the reason we added it. The reason we added it is the first case I said, where lots of people wanted to use like Yeoman and things like that to generate web templates outside of Visual Studio, but they wanted to use Visual Studio as the editor, and we were fighting them. It comes back to that concept we said earlier, which is modern cloud applications. Modern developers wanted to use tools that weren't necessarily part of Visual Studio, and instead of fighting them, we should be working with them. All right? Does that sound like a good goal? Sounded like a good goal to us. Do what web developers want. Give web developers what they want. And Visual Studio is an amazing IDE, and people should be allowed to use it for as many things as they can. Okay, so now I'm going to create a web application. I'm going to change the auth type to no authentication. The only reason I'm doing that is because it doesn't generate as much stuff. If I added the authentication, there would have been like a DB context and a database connection and a whole bunch of stuff. I'm just going to avoid that for now because I'm doing a demo and I don't have much time. If you want to do this, you can do it and you can have authentication and it's fine. Vittorio is going to be here after me talking all about authentication. I'm sure he'll think I'm a terrible person for showing you a demo that doesn't have anything in it. Are you here, Vittorio? You are. Yeah, I thought you might be. Okay. So, this is what your pipeline looks like. Vittorio works very closely with us on making sure all of our authentication stuff works, too. Everybody gets scared when Vittorio comes in. So, this is what your pipeline looks like once you start adding MVC to it. Now, we said earlier that DI was baked in to the core. Again with the core. This configure service method is where you register all the types that you want to get via DI. You know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to add a thing with auth again instead. Turns out I might have been wrong about choosing no auth. And the reason I'm going to do this is because I think the one with the project template that has individual authentication gives you a better example for how that DI thing actually ties together because it uses some things that are interesting in there. So we're going to redo this. So that configure services method, inside there, you register all the types that the rest of the web frameworks and stuff are going to use. So anything that you want to use inside your project, you put in there. If you're going to use your own DB context, for example, So here in Configure Services, when you have auth, we create this we give you an email sender and an SMS sender type. And now, any class inside your entire ASP.NET application, if you want an IEmail sender and you just accept IEmail sender in the constructor, you'll get one, as long as we're the thing that's creating your type. And what that means is that if you go to your controller and inside the constructor of your controller, you just accept to type IEmail sender, you'll get an IEmail sender and you could use it. If you're creating a repository, customer repository, familiar with a repository pattern for data access? Some of you. Let's say you've got a class and an interface for how to access data, and it's called iDataThing, because that's what we should call things. We should have thing in them more often. iDataThing, and it has an implementation that talks to SQL Server, and you add it here, iDataThing, and you go to your controller, and you accept an iDataThing in your controller, it'll just get one every time. And depending on which of these methods you call in services here, it'll depend on whether it's always the same one, or it's a new one every time you get a new request, or what. And you can control it. And then every single piece of code inside the framework can be, you could replace, say you want to change from SQL Server to something else. More importantly, let's say you want to test all of your code by creating a mock iData thingy that doesn't actually talk to any database, it just does testing. Then you can just replace it by replacing the service, and all of the code still works exactly as it is. These are kind of the fundamental things that DI give you. We've just baking the concept in, putting it more in your face, so that when everybody wants to use it, or whenever you do use it, it's obvious how, and it's there. Also, because we wanted to use it to build our stack. So you can in here, replace types that MVC uses to do things in order to completely replace the behavior of MVC if you really want to. Okay? A few other really quick things at the end. I mean, I've just run through a bunch of really quick demos now. I've given you some of the core things. The home controller. This still looks exactly the same as an ASP.NET controller. So for anybody who are freaking out saying everything is different, for the most part, most of your vanilla MVC code and web API still kind of looks the same. There's not that much change. Because the controller is still a controller. It still has most of the same methods on it. For the most part, it's OK. Except, you could create a controller that doesn't even inherit from a controller-based class. It just has the name controller in it. Because it turns out, if you create a type called home controller, you probably wanted it to be a controller. Right? So you don't have to inherit from the base type in order to get it. If you do inherit from the base type, you get a bunch of cool methods, like this view method here. And so if you don't inherit from the base type, you'll have to return new, like, iAction result or something there instead. But you can choose to do that. You could return Razor from here, you could return JSON from here, and this controller could be return mixes of either JSON or Razor, depending on which method you route to, right? And then in our startup CS, I promised I would show you this earlier, down here we have this use MVC, and it has some routing information. So at this point, now that I'm saying use MVC and I'm giving some route information, that is how MVC gets added to your thing. By saying use MVC, it's now going to match against these routes, it's going to go find controllers, it's going to send your requests to them. That's how we'll start looking at the bit after server for HTTP requests. Right? And that's how the world starts to tie together. Now, I don't have very much time because this talk was very short. So my apologies for not being able to go in as in-depth as I would normally would for this. Let's go next. This is a very quick summary because a few people are confused by this. I had some people ask me already. You can use ASP.NET Core on both .NET Framework and .NET Framework 4.6 and .NET Core. The only real differences are that .NET Core can go side by side. You get faster startup, like low memory and high throughput. Due to some changes in the core, in like the CLI itself, that you don't get in full.NET, and full.NET is not cross-platform. So it's not as immediately black and white on whether you shouldn't, it shouldn't just, we would like all new applications to be on .NET Core if they can be, but that assumes they're going to be using like ASP.NET Core or UWP. If you're not using either of those two application models, then you stick with .NET Framework. There's nothing wrong with that, and don't feel forced. Typically, every time I talk about this, I have 5 people come up to me, all of them saying, what about web forms? And there's a few different types. Some of those people really want me to tell them that web forms is dead, so they can go back to their manager and say, web forms is dead. We have to convert all of our stuff to MVC. Unfortunately, I can't help you guys, if any of you are in the room, because it's still the same as it's always been. And in fact, WebForms got some new improvements this time around. Like, by using Roslyn to compile, to do some WebForms compilation, we sped up really large applications by orders of magnitude. I'm talking like 2 or 3 hours to compile down to like 2 or 3 minutes for a particular really complex applications. Feel free to join us. There's docs here. They have lots of cool stuff. Live.asp.net is where you can go to watch community stand-ups. They're very kind of transparent, open, frank discussions with the community about what we're doing from week to week. And all of the code is on GitHub. Feel free to go look and create issues if you'd like. And as always, I value your feedback. Tell the conference what you think. And let me know what you think, because I'm sure I'll read them all. Thank you very much.